Hello, Marcus Brigstock here.
For rights reasons, we are not able to include all of the music featured in the original Cabinet of Jazz radio series. I would urge you, beg you, plead with you to head in the direction of whatever streaming service you have or vinyl records you have or whatever you've got and go and listen to this incredible music.
It's the Cabinet of Jazz with Marcus Brigstock on Jazz FM. Listening colour.
Welcome to the Cabinet of Jazz, recorded live at Pizza Express Soho for Jazz FM. Woo! Woo, indeed. 1964 was the year Dizzy Gillespie ran for president, and 64 was a big year. Elizabeth Taylor got married. Although, to be fair, that happened most years. In 1964, Beatlemania gripped the United States. The Fab Four played in front of crowds who screamed so loud they could easily have been playing Neil Diamond songs, and literally no one would have known. Maybe one of the Beatles should have run for office, not John, obviously, because it's too hard to prepare a budget when there's no possessions. Don't undermine me. When Dizzy Gillespie ran for president in 64, he said his running mate would be comedian Phyllis Diller, a jazzer and a clown running the free world. Sounds very good to me. How about we persuade Herbie Hancock to run for president now and get Kristen Wiig to be vice president? Or Gregory Porter with Sarah Millican as VP.
Mm. I'll race for President Gregory Porter. Seriously, Gregory, what's under that little hat?
That would be a very weird moment for people who don't know Sarah Millican's voice. But why stop there? I mean, why don't we have Kate Bush for president with Billy Connolly as vice president, right?
Whoa, Kate, you're amazing, by the way.
I literally just wrote down the people I can do bad impressions of. Now, folks, inspired by Dizzy's run, tonight I will inaugurate a new president and invite them to create their own Cabinet of Jazz. They will nominate four musicians from the world of jazz, soul and blues to take up positions in their cabinet, three for offices of state that actually exist, and one wild card left to the president's discretion. My guest for this episode, the last in the series, it's been so fun, is an actor, writer, musician and director. He played Lester Freeman in The Wire and Big Chief Albert Lambrow in the wonderful HBO series Tremé. He also wrote and starred in Five Guys Named Moe and a bunch of other wonderful stuff. Ladies and gentlemen, would you please welcome the next president of the United States of Jazz, Clark Peters! Good evening, sir. How are you?
Very well, very well.
Thank you. So nice to have you here. So tell me about you and jazz.
It's the first music I heard, probably. Mm-hmm. You know, my father came out of the whole bebop era, you know, and I was born in the early 50s, so, you know, you can see where that is. It was just in and around the house all the time. You know, 78 records, I can remember those scratchy tunes. Well, I don't know whether you would call the Dandridge Sisters jazz. It was sounds like that. Baby yeah. Dodds, it was a drummer. I remember listening to a record of rudiments that Baby Dodds used to play, you know, and this was just the funkiest thing, you know. So it goes back there. Count Basie was always blowing around the house, you know. Not like literally, but...
No,
like,
but the, you know, but the
you
music.
Know, was like, yeah, know, yeah. Because... Yeah. At that point in time, you know, people were still dancing to jazz.
Yeah,
you
yeah.
Know, that was the music to dance to, you know, and cats like Count Basie had that little thing that made you move.
Absolutely.
You know? So I guess in my body there is a feeling of being held in my mother's arms. I owe a lot of my movement to her, you know, from standing on her feet and tap dancing and stuff like that.
We're going to talk tonight, obviously, about a little bit about politics, predominantly about jazz, but where those two meet. So we got to talk about Tremé, which is, by the way, one of my favorite TV shows of all time. I was devastated when it ended. And if anybody hasn't seen Tremé, when you talk about politics and jazz, it's hard looking at that show to know what hit New Orleans harder, Katrina or politics. Yeah. Both at the same time seemed a deadly combination. But how was it working on that show, and what did you learn?
What I learned is that in the divisiveness of the city, you know, divided by class, by race, by gender, by different cultures coming in, that you can see people come together, and to see people who were at each other's throats last week following something like Katrina, helping each other rebuild their communities, gives you a pretty good idea of what we're capable of. Mm. You know, and because what they realize is that the enemy is not the white dude down the block, you know, the enemy is the elements. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And we all need to live. You know, it's a Dionysian city, that's what I would call it, because they celebrate food, you know, and all of the mixtures of not just food, but all the sounds of the Spanish, of the French, of the Germans, of the indigenous people, whether it's the Creek or the Cherokee, as well as the African mixing in. That's jazz. Mm. That's jazz. You can't just say it's like an Afro-European kind of thing. No, man. It's all of that coming on in. And to have a celebration of Indians, you know, yeah. Indians who are my complexion, not the Hollywood Indians, you know, and people who have kept this tradition alive, you know, for the past 200, 300 years to celebrate their culture, you know, with music.
Yeah, and the music in that show, incredible. It was, I mean, part of the mission statement for the show was to scoop up those musicians and get them in. One of my favorite scenes, I think in the final series, is when you and your son Delmar are making the record and you're working with Ron Carter.
Yeah, Ron.
And you go over to Ron Carter.
I have to tell him how to play the bass, man. You know, y'all know Ron Carter? What? How many people know Ron Carter?
Yeah.
Well, I had to show him how to play the bass, you know. You're laughing, man.
He needed some tuition.
It's there on film. You can see it, man. I'm teaching Ron Carter how to play that bass, boy.
Now, Clark, we got to get you sworn in as president. Now, under normal circumstances, the new president would swear in on a copy of the Bible. But to be honest with you, after Trump did it, it just feels kind of cheap now. Like, once his tiny, tiny hand...
Such an enormous
had rested
toll.
On that book, and he got, I've read so many parts, I love it all. It seems cheap. So I've asked you to choose something else to swear in on instead. Obviously, we have it here. And this isn't just it. This is the first edition.
Oh, wow.
Right?
Is that how I'm getting paid?
We'll see.
Just checking.
Clark, what have you bought that you're going to swear in on?
It's called Little Black Pearls. And Little Black Pearls is the history of women in the 20s and prior to the 20s who sang blues and jazz. Yeah. And it's the first book that my eyes looked at when I was looking across my vast library of books. I thought it was appropriate again, you know, for now.
Yeah, absolutely. Seems like the perfect book to swear in on for this role.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I've written you an oath, which is right here. So, Clark, I'd like you to place your left hand on this incredible first edition volume here that we've got, your Black Pearls, Blues Queens of the 1920s, and say out loud, please, the oath.
Okay. I do solemnly swear that I shall uphold the values, traditions, and aspirations of... United States of Jazz. I'll keep time with Art Blakey, swing with Count Basie, go fast like Lee Morgan, or loud like Smith's organ. I'll go soft like Ella Fitzgerald refrain, or find spirit and power like Johnny Coltrane. If you're bad, I'll glare just like Nina Simone, and like Miles, I'll never rest on my throne. With the guidance of Satchmo and Billy and Bird, I will lead like Duke Ellington, and you have my word. This I do solemnly swear, so help me, Diz.
Well, look at that. little jazz poem. So before we go any further, I need to check with you. Do you think the world would be a better place if it was run by jazz musicians?
No.
No. This has been a consistent problem through the series.
No.
It's a thin premise, isn't it?
Yeah, brother. You know, try to get Miles to stop playing, like, you know. Or Coltrane, isn't you? Just slow down a bit, you know.
Or fighting with Miles.
You know, oh, hell no.
Because when Dizzy originally proposed this, he was going to make Miles the head of the CIA. Can you imagine the problems? Well, folks, we've met and inaugurated our president for the week, so we now need to find out who is in Clark Peters' cabinet. Now, the first position you wanted to occupy was Secretary of Defense.
Yes.
But you don't want just an individual here. Who do you want?
No. I think that there's a lot to be defended in America, and it doesn't take one person. It takes a clan, and I've nominated the Marcellus family to be my Secretary of Defense, and the reason why is because you like that.
Yeah.
We'll give the Marcellus family a hand now. That's right. That's right. Because they defend jazz as a family.
Don't they just?
Yes, they do, really. You know, back to when I was in New Orleans, you know, every Friday night, God bless them, Ellis would be at the Snug Harbor giving you a lesson, you know. And sometimes Delphio would be there playing drums or playing trombone, you know, and any of the Marcelluses could come on through. So, you know, they held it down. And I trust people like that to hold down the culture. That's why the Secretaries of Defense.
I love the idea of a family doing it. Before we go any further, let's see. It's kind of rare, actually, for the Marcellus family to all play together. But we got a special recording that they did. Whatever discord existed in that family, Cain and Abel seemed a perfect choice, but man, they swing. They play beautifully together.
Yeah, you know, and it's Mrs. Marcellus who really bound those men together, you know, who really put a foot
She down. Didn't play.
No,
right?
She didn't, but you know, she was the conductor, though.
Yeah,
she was the master orchestrator, believe me.
Do you think that as Secretary of Defense, you see more conflict or them being able to get us out of conflict?
I think that they would be able to get us out of conflict because you could hear those discords going on, but still they were part of the collective whole that really swung, you know. Mm-hmm. And so like, just like life, you know, sometimes we shy away from or we don't resolve the conflicts, you know. But in jazz, there's always some resolution. You're not just left out, beep, and that's it, you know what I'm saying? So I think they would be able to resolve some conflicts. They would at least get us around the table to start jamming together.
Exactly.
You know.
And the idea of going into a conflict with an entire family guiding the process, because if my family's anything to go on, I mean, if nothing else, a lot of conflicts would take the form of passive aggression, which, whilst I don't love it, is better than real aggression.
Why have aggression at all? You know.
You haven't met my family.
Yeah, we got to get beyond that. We got to find some harmonies.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, but you're definitely right when you talk about Wynton and Branford particularly being like, they're like guardians of jazz, you know?
Yeah, the whole family is. There was another album that I used to listen to on a cassette years ago, where is a history of blues. It must be about 3 hours long. But I used to listen to this going back and forth all the time. And it would swing. And not only did it swing, it was an education. You know, they took you from the early 1900s and they were dropping names and dates and telling little stories and all the time playing. They are the guardians of it. You know?
Absolutely.
And we need more of that.
There was a great moment, I think it was a pretty recent interview actually, with Wynton talking about when he met Ella Fitzgerald. And by that time, she was sitting in a wheelchair most of the time. Mm. And she knew exactly who he was. He was very awed by being in her presence. And she talked with him briefly about him being like this guardian. And then right at the end, she went, good luck. Like in a really pointed way. It's like, yes. Good luck with that. Yes. That's a mission. But he does. Wynton particularly is very keen that with jazz, that whatever else happens, whatever experimentation happens, improvisation and all the rest of it, that swing is at the heart of it. So yeah. I like this as a suggestion as Secretary of Defense, because swing you cannot do without listening to others.
Yeah, that's right. Yes. When you go back to New Orleans, you know, you have five horns, right? Nobody knows what they intend to play, right? Mm-hmm. You get a trombone, you get a clarinet, you get a cornet, you get a tuba. Mm. You might even get an oboe or a flute up and through there, you know? And if you're listening to them, you think, like, how do they know where to go? Mm. You know, who's keeping the bottom, you know? And it might start off with the tuba, boom, 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 you know, but it could end up with the flute going, and the, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So you're right. You have to listen. You know, there's a, in New Orleans, since Katrina, they've tried to really sort of kill the jazz culture by making laws, creating laws to stop music from being a nuisance in the streets. And this is brought about by people who have come to New Orleans post-Katrina because the property value had gone down. So you get a lot of people from the north, from the west, coming into New Orleans, right, saying, no, that noise is too much, you know. Well, why the hell did you come to New Orleans in the first damn place, you know?
Yeah. And I didn't come here to hear music, goddammit!
You know, yeah, I just want to go to Bourbon Street. But the point is that it's such a part of the culture that a kid 9 years old might be rummaging through their garage or an attic and come up with a horn, yeah. Right? And try, yeah. You know, try
oh,
to make
you've
noise.
Heard me play.
Yes, I have. I saw you play. You know, and that kid will go out on the stoop and try to make a noise, and someone will come on over and show that child how to play
yeah.
that tune or to make a noise, right? And so the whole community is part of yeah. the musical education. Buskers in New Orleans, if you can't play and you try to busk, boy, oh boy, man, you ain't getting nothing. You know what I'm saying? People will take your shit away from you. You know, don't offend us.
All right, well, I think that President Clark Peters' suggestion for the Marcellus family to be secretaries of defense, I am quite persuaded, but what do the audience here at Pizza Express Jazz in Soho? All right. There's some semblance of democracy at play. At play here. So the Marcellus family in their entirety will be our secretaries of defense. But let's have a listen to this next track, then you can tell us who it is.
Kurt Elling, that's exactly who it is. And he is my Secretary of Culture and Art. And the reason why is because, believe it or not, the United States does not have a Ministry of Culture and Art.
Are you serious?
Yeah, it is, yeah.
There's no Ministry for Culture and Art in the States?
Not as prominent as it should be.
Yeah.
Let's put it that way.
Yeah. Wow.
And so I think that, you know, what I dig about Kurt is that, you know, he's well-traveled. And he's adopted a little black brother. That's the other thing I dig about him, you know. He transcends, you know, the whole racial thing, and he is so much into his jazz. When I was working with him, he was calling his son every day, you know, to find out how things were, what he was up to. And to see this father, this adopted child, feel like this, I thought, you know, you are a special soul. And we're singing about the same range, you know. He's
not a tenor, you know.
So I gravitate towards a man who sing in from the bottle.
Sure. Yeah. And do you think he would be a champion of all arts and culture?
Yes, okay. Most definitely. Because he's not myopic. Because he's well traveled. Because he has worked with so many other artists across the board, men, women, black, white, Chinese, Japanese, whatever, you know. And I think that it takes someone who has an eclectic intellect to be able to hold that post the way that I would like to see it being held.
Absolutely.
Know? To be able to share all of this. You know, we need some cross-pollination. Well, there's always been some cross-pollination, but like, you know, we just need more of that.
Yeah, know? Well, it seems like a pretty good choice. I've got a couple of quotes here from Kurt. He said, I love this quote when he was talking about project selection. He said, I look for things that I think I can contribute to in some way, to the history of the song by way of, I don't know about innovation, but some kind of personal stamp, some way of conveying that composition to my contemporaries and those who listen. That's very cool to be so selective and think, well, hang on, anybody can cover a song or set about on a project, but what can I bring to this? How can I make this my own?
Eclectic.
Yeah.
Intellect.
What do you do when you're starting a big new project? You've done a whole wide range of different things, written stuff, directed stuff, acted in a bunch of stuff.
First thing I do is get really nervous. And then I focus on the truth that I can find within it. You know, we lost one of our great queens of the film, you know, Cicely Tyson last year. Maybe it was this year. And she was asked pretty much the same question, you know, and she answered it absolutely accurately, and it clarified things for me. She said, I try to find things in which I can speak my truth. And that's what I try to do, you know, whether it's music or whether it's theater or film or a character, you know, I try to find something in that I can latch my heart onto. Mm-hmm. And let that carry me on through. And it's not always good people, you know. Sometimes it's just the story itself. You know, this whole egocentric hierarchy of Hollywood and you know, A-listers, B-listers and all that, you know, I think that we've forgotten that the story you're telling is really the star. You just a part of it. So I try to find a good story and tell that, you know, and be a part of that.
All right, so Kurt Elling for Secretary of Arts and Culture. I'm going to put it to the audience. Oh, okay, people are not as swayed by the Marsalis family. Don't just nod everything through, guys. It's no good whistling now. All right.
It was a trick question, right?
All right, so Kurt Elling for Secretary of Arts and Culture. Now, we're recording this live at Pizza Express Soho, and I've set the audience to work coming up with their own ideas for cabinet members. So let's have a look at what a few of you have suggested. Joni Mitchell as Minister of Sport. Why? Because of her fondness for ice skating. What other suggestions do we have here? Leonard Cohen, Minister of Finance. No, I'm saying no. That's a hard pass on that one. Amy, this runs up against your suggestion for Kurt Elling. Amy Winehouse, Minister of Culture. I mean, it's a certain approach to culture. I don't know. I feel like we can't speak ill of someone as amazing as Amy Winehouse, but I do feel like the ministry might be a little bit quirky and unmanageable. Gregory Porter, this is a cool ministerial position. Yeah. The Minister of Gentleness.
Yeah.
that's what we need. And this is another great suggestion here. Emily Sande, Minister of Opportunities. What a great ministerial post that would be. Just someone whose whole job it is. To
give
just,
you opportunities?
Yeah, just create. No, not me. I'm a straight white male. I'm fine. All right, what have we got? Charlie Parker, Minister of Transport. He would sort out the parking and aviation issues. Because his name's Parker? Now, for this next role, you've selected two artists, and I'm not going to say who they are, but we're going to hear versions of both of them singing the same tune. All right, Clark, you want to tell us who we were listening to there?
No, I want the audience to tell me who you listening to.
Who was the gentle one we heard first? Diana Krall is the right answer, correct.
Who was swinging it after that? There you go.
Dee Bridgewater.
There you go.
That's right.
That's right. That's
Diana Krall and Dee Dee Bridgewater. Well, you have nominated them as the joint chiefs of whatever the hell they want to be in charge of.
Does that work? See, that didn't even call for any prompting. There you go. And that's exactly how I put it. Whatever the hell they want to be.
Now, is that, Mr. President, because you're intimidated to assign a role to them? You think if you told them what to do, they'd have you for dinner?
Yeah, probably yeah. so.
What do you think they'd be particularly good at?
Well, I really don't know. Just because I dig them both as vocalists.
Yes.
You know, that's it. I dig them both. And you only give me four postings, man. You know,
yeah.
there's a whole slew of people that I want to throw up and well, do you, there. But I felt that I would have Dee Dee from my community and Donna from your community. And I felt that those two together, you know, might find a harmony for all of us. Simple as that.
I like it. All right, I like it. I mean, you said I've only allowed you four, but you've already...
Had a whole family,
yeah,
I know.
Yeah, you've already
I snuck them in.
And then two people here. Yeah, I mean, this is...
Yeah, I know.
This sounds like...
You know what my presidency is going to be like, don't you?
Sounds like a private party in the Treme. Yeah, bring everybody in. Yeah, no, I like this. I mean, I think maybe that's a good example, those two versions there, and there are hundreds, maybe thousands of versions of that wonderful piece of music, of the different ways that people approach things and getting the two of them to work together to run...
Well, you know, I think it'd be like good cop and bad cop, wouldn't it?
Yes.
You know?
Yeah. Maybe they could do, like, kind of crisis management, you know? Send them in when something goes wrong.
Or negotiators.
Have you seen them both play live? You seen a Diana Krall play live?
I haven't seen Diana play live, but I've worked with Dee Dee.
Yeah.
But I can't wait to see her. And I think that the other part thing I dig about her is that, what's her husband's name? Right? Can you imagine being married to Elvis Costello? Man, with a name like Elvis Costello? Elvis Costello. But I think that's what I dig about her as well.
Yeah.
You know, or about them. You know, and the appreciation of music.
All right, so Diana Krall and Dee Dee Bridgewater, the joint chiefs of whatever the hell they want to be in charge of. I'm going to have to revisit that one and see. Well, no, listen, you know, not all of these automatically get through. Now, usually our presidents only have one wild card, but you have, I mean, technically you've taken three. You've created a ministerial position, arts and culture that kind of didn't quite exist. There's whatever the hell they want to do. And finally, this wild card. But before we say what that is, let's have a listen to this piece of music. Before you tell us who that was, why don't you tell us the position that you've created there?
Yeah, the ambassador of love and light. Yeah.
And who was that we were listening to?
Let me ask, anyone else know that voice? And I know that you don't, and I'm ashamed of you for not knowing. I really am, you know. Because everyone loves Cleo Lane, you know, but very few really want to listen to Elaine Del Mar.
One person did know, but was too shy to say, Elaine Del Mar.
Elaine Del Mar, you know, born and bred right here out of Britain and is homegrown. And she is really just love and light, as you can hear. She embodies so many great singers, you know. Sometimes you can hear Ella moving through her or Sarah Vaughan moving through her, and she can scat like nobody's business as well, you know. Not as frantic as Dee Dee, not frantic, but not as frantic as Dee Dee, you know. As she's getting up there in the years, you know, I just think that she's such a product of now and a continuity of the Afro-Caribbean story in England, you know, with her father playing with Snake Hips Johnson and the stories that she carries with her as well. And you can hear it in her voice.
You really can.
You can hear the love and the light in her voice. And she's got the greatest smile. And she's a giggler. I love that. If she starts laughing on Monday, she's laughing all the way to the end of the week.
And you've worked with her, like, way back when, yeah?
I met her in Bubbling Brown Sugar, 1978. And we got to be really good friends, you know. What I loved about it is that she's regal. She really is a queen, you know, and she carries herself like that, you know. And with her, as I say, she has this whole history that is like her train that she carries with her. Can I tell a story about her?
Please do. Yeah.
You know, we're doing Bubbling Brown Sugar, and Bubbling Brown Sugar is the story of two old vaudevillians or from another generation who are trying to school a younger generation on what Harlem is like. You know, I found out on my way to Harlem. You know, and Elaine was the one who took us back in time. And the stage was set so that we had like a pyramid shape where the whole cast sat on. And the entrance to the stage was through the center of the pyramid, coming straight downstage. And she had the best entrance of any actor in the world. You know, straight downstage, spotlight on her. She had this beautiful sequin blue dress, you know, just gorgeous. When she walked out, all the light in the world was blue, and there she was, you know. And her line was, poet and sage turn out page after page about Harlem, true and untrue. Now, I'm neither poet nor sage, and I know it. However, if I may be clever, this is my point of view. It's a symphony, la, 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 la. And she goes into opening up the song. Well, the great Billy Daniels and Lon Satin were trying to introduce her, you know, and they're saying, you know, well, we don't know about that, you know, but we know that Miss Page knows about that, you know, and on that was her cue to come on, you know, and she wasn't there. And so they begin ad-libbing. Yeah, Miss Page really knows about what's going on in Harlem. Yeah, we don't know anything there, but Miss Page knows what's going on in Harlem. And then we hear this running around the backstage. She comes through, and she's all flustered. You know, and she goes, oh, yes, yeah. Poet and sage turned out page after page about Harlem. True and untrue. Well, what she realized was not only was she late, but she had on her feet these really dusty pink mules. Now, if you can imagine the blue like these lights here, you know, with an old dusty pink, you know, your eyes are going to go right there. And hers did as well. But that wasn't the cap of it all. Her dress, she had a halter neck and a small bolero jacket that went over it. It was really a beautiful piece of apparel. And so she came on out, and we found out later that she had been looking for the brassiere to wear underneath this halter neck piece, right? So the first thing she notices is the mules. And so she goes, poet and sage turn up page after page about Harlem. And the bra was hanging
on
her sleeve. And she laughed for the next month. All you had to do was look at her arm or look at her feet, and she would be off. I love her for it.
If nothing else, she could just recount that story as Minister of Love and Light. What would you like the Ministry of Love and Light to see to?
Less hate.
Mm-hmm.
Light as enlightenment, as an education. You know, it's just ignorance that separates us. It really is. That's all that separates us, is just ignorance and being stuck in our own boxes and having something imposed on us that we've accepted, you know, and there's no reason to accept that. You know, here's a good example. Everyone does these DNA tests, right? Where are you from? You know what I mean? Right? Mm-hmm. Now, it's DNA, right? It's in your body, right? It's part of you organically. It has nothing to do with the terrain of the land that you live on. Should it? Mm-hmm. It's you. So I've got a friend who says, oh, man, look at this. I'm part Nigerian. I've got some American in me. I've got Irish. I'm thinking, since when is Nigeria an ethnicity? Mm-hmm. You know, so these divisions that are put on top of us give us a sense that will force us to be a bit xenophobic because there's a border there and that you are not a part of. Yet, what they're really looking at is that you are Igbo or you are Cherokee or you are Celtic, mm-hmm. you know, and rather than going back to that, you are from Ireland or you are from Scotland. Who the hell? No, no. Your DNA is not looking at a geographical location on the spot. It's looking at who you are and what makes you up. You know, so I would bring Elaine to enlighten us and using examples for us to throw off these shackles that have been thrown on us, mm-hmm. you know, to find a way for us to, you know, that would be the light. The love is just... She could just sing us into education. <You know?
laughs> All right. Well, that's pretty persuasive. So I'm definitely going to allow Elaine as the Secretary of Love and Light.
Love and Light.
But looking over your choices, the Marsalis family for defense, yes. Mm-hmm. Kurt Elling. Arts and culture. That definitely, we're going to put that through. But I'm going to say... I'm very thankful Diana Krall and Dee Dee Bridgewater, we heard those two wonderful versions,
but it's too vague,
so I'm not letting them through.
All right, okay, all right. Yeah. Oh, there you go.
Yeah, well.
I will let the people speak.
I don't care if the mob turn on me, that's fine, that's absolutely fine. Okay, well, that's it, sadly. That's all the time we have. In fact, the entire series. Now, we've had some wonderful suggestions across the series. We've had Count Basie and the entire Count Basie Orchestra running the Ministry of Defense. Joni Mitchell as Secretary for the Environment. Free jazz legend Phil Minton as Secretary of Health. That was Stuart Lee suggested that. And Tom Waits as Secretary of State for Misfits, which I like. What a cabinet that would be. So would the world be a better place if it was run by jazz musicians? I'm still sadly against it, but I would like year on year to divide it up by instrument. So the world should be run just by jazz trumpet players for a year, and then trombonists. Once the trumpet players have made a real mess of it, the trombonists could come and go, look, this is a way more complicated instrument, and tidy it up. And then the saxophonists could bring a bit of light to it, and then we'd get the bass and drum players to tidy everything up and put it back together.
I would kick off with the bass first, you know. Yeah.
Bass first to give it some guidance.
You got to lay that down first, you know. Know, and then give a little impetus.
What about the clarinets? I was including them alongside the saxophone. Not, you know, like it's its own thing. I'm as much a fan of Akabilk as you are, sir. My thanks to this week's president, Clark Peters, to tonight's Tomorrow's Warrior pianist, Sultan Stevenson, to my producer, Debbie Kilbride, executive producer, Alison Vernon-Smith, and, of course, to Pizza Express for having us here. The Cabinet of Jazz is a Loftus Media production for Jazz FM, supported by the Audio Content Fund.